So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 9, text number 12. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mogasya Moga Karmano Moga. Everyone, okay, repeating? All right, very good. Mogasya Moga Karmano. Mogha Gyana Vicheta Saha. Rakshasim Masurim Chaiva Pakritim Mohinim Shrita Mogasya Moga Karmano Mogha Gyana Vicheta Saha Rakshasim Masurim Chaiva Pakritim Mohinim Shita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness and in devotional service, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as the Absolute Truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service, going back to Godhead, will never be tasted. Similarly, those who are engaged in fruitive pious activities and who are ultimately hoping to be liberated from this material entanglement will never be successful either, because they deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demoniac or atheistic. As described in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, such demoniac miscreants never surrender to Krishna. Therefore, their mental speculations to arrive at the Absolute Truth bring them to the false conclusion that the ordinary living entity and Krishna are one and the same. With such a false conviction, they think that the body of any human being is now simply covered by material nature, that it, as soon as one is liberated from this material body, there is no difference between God and himself. This attempt to become one with Krishna will be baffled because of delusion. Such atheistic and demoniac cultivation of spiritual knowledge is always futile. That is the indication of this verse. For such persons, cultivation of the knowledge in the Vedic literature, like the Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads, is always baffled. It is a great offense, therefore, to consider Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be an ordinary man. Those who do so are certainly deluded because they cannot understand the eternal form of Krishna, the Brihad Vishnu Smriti. Clearly states, Yoveti Bhautikam Dehaṁ Krishnasya Paramatmanah Sarasavasmad Bahiskarya Shrutta Smarta Vedhanatah Mukam Tashyai Valokyapi Sachelam Snanamacharit. One who considers the body of Krishna to be material should be driven out from all rituals and activities of the Shruti and the Smriti. And if by chance one sees his face, one should at once take bath in the Ganges to rid himself of infection. People jeer at Krishna because they are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their destiny is certainly to take birth after birth in the species of atheistic and demoniac life. Perpetually, their real knowledge will remain under delusion, and gradually they will regress to the darkest region creation. Oma Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So this verse is describing those who are deluded, those who are bewildered. So what percentage of the population is that? 99.999999%. You may sometimes wonder, why is it sometimes difficult to become Krishna conscious? Well, that is described in Bhagavad Gita, Sanjat Sanjayate Kama. One's consciousness is developed according to one's company. So if we are associating in a world where 99.999999999% of the people are deluded, that has a very strong magnetic pull on us to be deluded. In spite of having this knowledge, in spite of hearing from Srila Prabhupada and so many advanced devotees in Prabhupada's movement, still it's difficult for us sometimes. You see, it's difficult. It's a fact. Difficult. So, how do we make it easy? I mean, who wants to be in difficulty? Nobody wants to be in difficulty. Everybody wants to have it easy. So how do we make it easy to become Krishna conscious? Well, that's the whole purpose of this society. The Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully given us ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It is a vehicle, it is a mechanism, it is a system, it is a sangha or association which enables us to easily be Krishna conscious. Just like when we're gathered together here at this program, you see, our only business is to hear and chant about Krishna, talk about Krishna, hear about Krishna, sing for Krishna, dance for Krishna, eat for Krishna, prasadam, you see. It's not difficult to be Krishna conscious when you're with the devotees. So, what about when you're not with devotees? Well, then we just have to make everybody in the world into a devotee, that's all. Then we won't have any problem. We just have to convince all these deluded souls to become devotees. What's the difficulty? Difficulty is they don't want to become. So, that's called preaching work. We have to somehow think, how can I induce them? Think how you were induced. I mean, we were all deluded, practically all of us. Maybe a few people were born in devotee families, but you know, most of us were born into deluded families. And somehow we came in contact with a person who was practicing Krishna consciousness, and they amazed us by their consciousness. And we thought, well, they have something that I don't. I'd like to have that, so let me associate with them and get that. So we should never lose that freshness, that state of wonder and awe about this wonderful thing known as Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we take it for granted. We start seeing all the faults. Well, this devotee has that fault, that devotee has that fault. We start seeing all the negative stuff. We really have to keep our vision positive. Just like when you have a cup that has 50% water in it and 50% empty space, what do you say? Do you say it's half full or half empty? If you have a positive viewpoint, you'll say, oh, it's half full. If you have a negative viewpoint, it's half empty. It's no good, it's half empty. You see? So in this way, we have to have a positive viewpoint and see what are the wonderful qualities of the devotees so we can appreciate them and want to be with them. Because even by remembering the devotees, we get spiritual strength. So we really have to learn how to be a part of a wonderful, happy member of this spiritual family that was started by Prabhupada. It's really, all it boils down to, it's a spiritual family. It's not some, you know, highly organized, you know, corporation. It really isn't, honestly speaking. I remember one godbrother told me, someone said, you know, I don't believe in organized religion. He said, well, you like our movement because we're very disorganized. So it's not really, the Krishna Ganga's movement is not like a corporation, it's a family. It's a family of people who like to be together, like to do things together, because we share a common interest. We all want to become Krishna conscious. We all want to get out of this material world. So if we associate as much as we can in a loving way, a serving way, an appreciative way with the other devotees, then by that association, everything would just come up and become brighter and brighter and more wonderful and more wonderful. Because where in the world can you find pure love? Love which is self-interested, you see. Love which is selfish is not love. Such so-called love is actually lust. Oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, you know. Let me enjoy your body, and then, you know, next week I love somebody else. This is the modern day modus operandi of the materialists. That is not love, you see, that is selfishness. Actual love is pure, is devoid of any tinge of wanting to get something for ourselves. Pure love means I simply want to give, 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 give. That's pure love. So how do you do that? In this world, even if we try to give pure love, we get cheated. You see, we selflessly give ourselves to someone, and what do? They rip us off. And we're frustrated, we become bitter, we become cynical and skeptical. You see? So, the real thing is, you have to repose that pure, selfless love in the Supreme. That source from whom everything is coming, that Supreme who is supplying all of our necessities, the air that we're breathing, the heartbeat that's keeping us going, the temperature that keeps us from dying, everything is being supplied. Eko bahanam yo vidadati kama. Everything is being supplied by that Supreme Person. So, we have to selflessly give ourselves to that person who will not cheat us, who will not exploit us, that we can put our full, complete, total trust in, and that is God, Supreme Lord Krishna. If we actually can do that, say, all right, from now on, everything is for Krishna. Every thought in my mind that has to be for Krishna, every word that comes out of my mouth should be for Krishna. Every action I perform in my body, it should all be for Krishna. We just encourage everyone, try it. Just try it. You can always go back to serving your selfish desires, but try as an experiment just doing everything for Krishna for 6 months and see what the result is in your consciousness. Krishna says, yat karoshi, yad ashnashi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yat tapashashi onkonteya, tat karushva madarpanam. He says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. So just make an experiment. Do it for 6 months. We invite everyone to make the Hare Krishna experiment, you see. Try doing everything for Krishna for 6 months and see what is the result. If you don't like it, well, you can go back to serving your selfish desires, indulging in the petty thrills of this world. That's what you want. You see, it's certainly available here in Antwerp. The petty thrills are out there, the illicit sex, The meat eating, the intoxication, the gambling, it's all there, very cheap. You can get it very easily in this city, isn't it? So, you've been doing this for how many millions of lifetimes? Going after the senses, sense pleasures. Where has it gotten you? Another damn rotting body, isn't it? So, why not make an experiment? Just give one life in the service of Guru and Krishna. One life. And just see what the result is. Even if you give 6 months, then you'll get some very good idea of what the difference is between serving God and serving your selfish, sensual desires. The real bottom line is you'll actually enjoy millions of times more. They're afraid to give up their cheap thrills of material existence. But they don't realize how they're cheating themselves. They're holding on to that broken beer bottle, you see, thinking this is enjoyment, when they could get a handful of the most fabulous rubies, sapphires, and diamonds. You see, Krishna consciousness. They're holding on to their beer bottle, thinking that maybe a few drops of beer I can lick off the broken glass. You see? So, we should not be deluded by those persons who are captivated by the influence of Srimati Maya Devi. You see? We should not be in that camp. We should be in the Krishna camp. God. Supreme Person. Because our nature, we are actually created as lovers of God. That's our dharma, our intrinsic nature. The Supreme Person is emanating us from Himself for the sole purpose of wanting to have rasa, or loving exchange with us. That's why we exist. It's the only reason we exist. But in order for that love to be real, there has to be a choice. Love me or leave me. You see? That choice must be there. Otherwise, you're just a prisoner. You're God's prisoner. You see? There has to be that free will. Love me or leave me. So if you choose to stay, then that is love. You're not forced. You're not coerced. You have the full freedom to act. So, therefore, Krishna has given us choice. All right, now you choose. So, out of the infinitude of living entities which make up the vast, unlimited spiritual sky, if there is a choice, there is always some minute degree or probability that some of those infinite number of living entities will misuse that choice. So, guess what? Here we are, folks. We misused it. We blew it. Instead of wanting to serve Krishna, we thought, I'd like to be Krishna. You see? Krishna said, well, actually, you can't be me, but I will let you think that you're me. I will give you a place where you can think that you're me. Antwerp. So many Krishnas are walking up and down the street. Krishnas mean, I am the star of the show and everyone else is my supporting actor. You see, I'm the big star. Well, we can play our little charade for a while until we get tired of it, and then, you know, we may wonder why am I suffering? It doesn't seem right. A thoughtful person, he will come to that conclusion. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanamanam rupadyate vasudeva sarvamati sa mahatma sadurlabham. He will finally come to that conclusion. What's going on here? I have a natural tendency to enjoy, but yet I live in a world where suffering is forced upon me. There's something unnatural going on here. there's some kind of pollution here which should not be here. You see, an intelligent philosopher realizes there's something wrong here. The foolish moron just thinks, yeah, I got a job, I got some money, I'm going to the bar, I'm going to the movie, everything's great. You know. There's three kinds of persons described in the Bhagavatam. Two of them are blissful and one of them is miserable. The complete fool who thinks, yeah, I got my job, I got my money, I got my girlfriend, I got sex every night, and I got my motorcycle, and I'm really happy. You see? That's the... that person's in a state of illusory happiness. And there's the person who's completely self-realized, the Krishna-conscious devotee. You see, he's tasting the sweet nectar of Krishna consciousness at every minute. He's diving into an ever-increasingly wonderful ocean of nectar at every second. So he's happy, but the person in the middle, he's miserable. He knows the material world is miserable, but he hasn't found a solution. So it's actually better to be a miserable person in the middle than it is to be a foolish moron who thinks he's happy, you see. Because then you have hope of actually coming to Krishna consciousness. If one becomes very sincere in their desire to find out that knowledge which will relieve them from all suffering, guess what? Chaitya Guru, the Lord within your heart, will manifest externally in the form of a spiritual master who will then point out to you, my dear sir, please take this book of Srila Prabhupada, you see. Please take this book and read it. Your life will become sublime. So in this way, Krishna very mercifully helps those who are sincerely seeking escape from the misery of this material existence. He will bring them in touch with the spiritual master, he'll bring them in touch with the books of Srila Prabhupada, he'll bring them in touch with the holy names, with Vishadam, and so many wonderful aspects of Krishna consciousness that are available. He'll bring the sincere soul in contact with one of those sources. So they can become enlightened. So they can actually find that way out of the darkness. Let's see. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. That is the Vedic aphorism. Do not remain in darkness. Come to the light. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. So that facility is given. Krishna is an equal opportunity father. He gives every single living entity an equal chance to come out of the darkness. Everyone has the opportunity. Every single person throughout the whole existence has an equal opportunity to come out of darkness. One simply has to desire it. If you desire to come out of darkness, Krishna will facilitate you. He will give you everything you need to come out of the darkness and become a fully enlightened spiritual being, completely free from the anxiety and the misery of material existence. So this is the wonderful mercy of the spiritual master. This is the wonderful mercy of Krishna. This is the wonderful mercy of the Vaishnavas, that they give us the opportunity to come out of the delusion and actually realize our eternal nature as Krishna's servants and taste the sweetest nectar of eternity, knowledge, and bliss at every minute. So, we can ask now if any of you have some questions. Yeah.
You spoke about the demonic nature of some people. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there are also something like demonic spirits that influence people.
Demoniac spirits?
Yes,
of course. It's like so many ghosts are out there. There are many, many ghosts all over the world. If you're ready to be, if you're weak-minded, they will definitely take advantage. There are those things, but a devotee is protected from demoniac influences. The ghost, it means the person who has committed suicide, they have no gross body, but yet they have the gross desires. So They at night, they, when people are sleeping, the ghosts will go around and try to find a weak-minded person that they can take over their body. Sometimes one may experience being attacked by a ghost when you wake up and it's like you want to say something and you can't. It's a ghost trying to enter into your body. You ever had that experience? You're laying there, all of a sudden it's like you can't say anything. But if you, all you have to do is go, Krishna, just muster up your determination and go, Krishna, and then poof. That demoniac spirit will take off running faster than a speeding bullet.
Can these demoniac forces also influence your thoughts?
Actually, there's so many demoniac. Every billboard in town is a demoniac, demoniac influence. We're actually, even on the subtle platform, I mean, if you really get into it, we're being bombarded like you wouldn't believe it. See, on the subtle platform, all the radio waves, just imagine how many mobile phone conversations are coming through this room right now. How many people have mobile phones in Antwerp, you see? And how many of those vibration, you know, those the waves, so many, you know, the subtle plane, so many waves through the ether. They're transmitting these telephone conversations, radio shows, porno cable. I mean, you know, it's everywhere. And then subtly in the ether, vibrating in the ether. And it's just, there must be hundreds and thousands of things in this room right now. And they're all demoniac. But the good news is this Hare Krishna mantra is more powerful than all of them put together. So you don't... The demoniac influence is there. Even your own memories of past sinful activities are demoniac influence in your own psyche, coming up from your own subconscious. So yeah, we're in an ocean of demoniac influences right now. But the Hare Krishna mantra is so powerful, it cuts through all of them like a powerful laser. It just cuts through all of them with incredible precision and strength. So that's why Krishna says, Kirtaniya, that Lord Chaitanya says, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Lord Krishna says, Satatam Kirtayanto Mam. 24 hours a day, chanting. Sometimes people ask me, you know, how much should I chant? I say, tell them, you should chant 24 hours a day. Then you'll be Krishna conscious all the time. I say, well, I can't do that. Well, then chant 23 and a half hours a day. Can't chant 24 hours a day. If you can't do that, you chant 23 hours a day. The point is, chant as much as possible. The minimum is 16 rounds of japa. Because that's the minimum charge that will keep your spiritual battery going for 24 hours. It's like you wouldn't leave your house if your mobile phone wasn't charged, would you? You might miss an important call. So what, would you leave your house if you haven't done 16 rounds? You see? Fully charge your spiritual battery for the day so you can make it through to the next day. So if one will actually seriously take up chanting japa at least 16 rounds a day on the beads, especially in the early morning before sunrise, that's when you get the most powerful charge. Early morning before sunrise, Brahma Muhurta hour. If you will chant on the beads at that time of the day, wow! I mean, you'll be incredibly surcharged. With focus, if you can early morning before sunrise chant on those beads, you can just go right through that material energy and you won't be overwhelmed by any, you'll be a divine influence wherever you go because you're carrying Krishna within your heart. You see? No demoniac influence will be able to touch you, but if your own sadhana is very weak, you see, then you'll be struggling with the demoniac influences. Demoniac thought will come in your brain and you get carried away and you go, oh. You see? So you just have to chant very nicely every day. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then the material energy will have to go looking for more suitable victim. You won't be suitable victim. You'll be too hard to, you know, too hard to... Like a thief looks for an easy pick, an easy place to, an easy house to rob. He doesn't look for a difficult house to rob. So Mayadevi will have to find someone that's more susceptible to her influence. She won't bother you. If you've taken shelter of the holy names with great focus, with great intensity.
A few weeks ago I was exploring the internet and I found your site. And I subscribed to the Ultimate Self.
Oh, you're on the e-course, that's nice.
Yes, it's very, very nice. And then suddenly you're here, boom.
That's yes.
Interesting, isn't it?
And, you know, Krishna arranged it. He arranged it for you to find that on the internet. He arranged for me to come here today and for us to meet face to face. It was all by the arrangement of Krishna.
You see? If you think a little bit, in Vedanta, of course, it's said that this is all Maya. But in that reason, they said it's like magical reality. Are they compatible, those two?
What is the question? Say that again.
So in Vedanta, they say this is Maya, illusion.
Yeah.
In tantrism, they speak about more magical reality.
In what?
Tantrism.
Tantric. Yeah. Okay. Tantric. So there's the material nature and there's the material energy. Okay, and then there's the spiritual energy.
It says in Vedanta, it says this is material illusion.
Yeah.
And in tantricism, it says that it's a magical reality.
Well, the thing is. The that's only a partial understanding of Vedanta. The full understanding of Vedanta is that it is illusion in the sense that it is not what it appears to be, but it's not that it's unreal. The material world is real. This floor is real. You see? But it's not what it appears to be. Shishigonitai kijai. Just like your material body is a reality. But that it is you, that's the illusion. I'll give you a graphic example. Just imagine it's a cold, cold winter night here in Antwerp. And you go to the cinema house down there. Of course, we don't do that, but this is an example. You go to the cinema house, and there's, you know, the Fiji Islands, a movie about the Blue Lagoon, you see. And you're sitting there, and you're just swaying in the breeze, this wonderful soothing South Pacific breezes and the Blue Lagoon, and you feel like you're right there in the Fiji Islands, you know, watching the movie on the screen. But then what happens? The cinema comes to an end, you realize, oh my God, it's 20 below zero, and I have to walk home. My car broke down, I have to walk home 3 miles. You see? So, what was that you were experiencing? It was an illusion that we were in the Fiji Islands. But was the screen an illusion? No, there was a real screen there. Was there actual colors bouncing off of that screen? Yes, there were real colors bouncing off that screen. Was there actual sounds of, you know, Fijian people playing their traditional music? Yes. They were real Fijian people that were recorded, and their recording was put onto the film. So in this way, the screen is real, the colors are real, the projector is real, the projectionist is real, the movie house is real, but it's not what it appears to be. You actually forgot you were in Antwerp, and you thought you were in Fiji, the Blue Lagoon. So in that sense, that is the true Vedantic sense of things being an illusion. It's not that they don't exist. It's just that they're not what they appear to be. That's the illusion. Like a mirage in the desert, you see. There's an actual phenomenon. But it's not what it appears to be. It looks like water, but it's actually something else. There's actually something out there that can be measured scientifically. But it's not what it appears to be.
I understand you. And I was wondering if by any chance you have seen the movie The Matrix?
Like I said, we don't watch movies.
Okay.
I don't watch movies. I have a much better movie to watch. I'm watching a movie 24 hours a day. It's called Spreading Krishna Consciousness All Over. Well, I only watch the movie, I get to be in the movie.
I just want to use an image that they use also. And the image is that of a sort of virtual reality. which we are all absorbed, and the efforts of a little team of people, which could be us, you know, to extract people from that virtual reality and bring them back into the real reality.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. So that may be an analogy for our Krishna consciousness movement. But yeah, we're bringing people out of the virtual reality back into the actual reality by this power of this mantra. Yeah, that's what we're doing. Now they're living in a virtual reality called I'm a man, I'm a woman. You see, let's enjoy. You see, it's a virtual reality. Actually, you're not that body, it's just a covering. It's like I came in wearing this chadar, not sitting on the floor, you see. Your body is like this chadar. You can wear it, you can take it off. So you're not the body, actually. It's not you. You're not a woman. You're not a man. You're an eternal spirit soul, part and parcel of God. Any more questions? Anyone else have questions? Everything makes sense? Everybody's ready to fully dive into Krishna consciousness now. Take over your own heart. Get all the dirt out of the heart. We have a motto, take over your heart and take over the world. Because if you can actually conquer your own heart, then it's the most wonderful thing that the whole world can become happy. A question back here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thinking about adopting Krishna consciousness, but also to maintain one's inspiration, what is the importance? I mean, you could explain more about spreading Krishna consciousness and how it helps us in staying inspired.
Yes.
Life.
Yes, that is that. Actually, Prabhupada has told us the prime instruction of Krishna is that you know, sarva dharman padit your job, that you surrender unto me. That is the instruction of Krishna, the basic instruction. Prabhupada has said that same instruction is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in what form? Jaredeka Tarika Krishna Upadesh Amara Gaya Guru Hoya Taredesh. Whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you become guru and deliver the people of this country. So, in this present age, our surrender to Krishna is dedicating ourselves to spreading his message. That is our service. For Arjuna, it was to pick up the bow and arrows. For us, it's to tell people about Krishna. Arjuna had his battle of Kurukshetra, we have ours. Our battle of Kurukshetra is to spread this movement, to make a spiritual revolution on this planet. That everyone we meet, we want to tell them about Krishna. Somehow or other, we want to find ways to attract everyone to Krishna. That's our battle of Kurukshetra. So that, just as Arjuna became happy and satisfied by doing what Krishna wanted, so this is what Krishna wants us to do. He wants us to be spiritual revolutionaries. I just read a quote today, as we're coming down from Radhadesh. Prabhupada said, my instruction to my American and European disciples is that you should become guru and deliver the world. This is Prabhupada's instruction to all of his American and European disciples. Become guru and deliver the world. So you have your instruction. Prabhupada wants you to act as a preacher, a teacher of this science. Guru means a spiritual teacher. So everyone should be a teacher. Of course, that means you have to practice it also, otherwise you're a hypocrite. But you should practice the Krishna consciousness process and tell everyone about it you possibly can. Find the ways and means to effectively spread it as far and as wide as possible. This will, just like in my own practice, I found that when I figured out a way to spread Krishna consciousness on the internet, now I have 5,000 people in over 100 countries taking my daily newsletter, Thought for the Day, and my weekly lessons. So, and then I travel around to meet them. I never know. I go places, and as people say, yes, I'm signed up on your course. Anybody who wants to sign up, I have cards here. You can, all right. Anybody else? Yeah. Let's see if I have some more. I think I have more here. So this is very nice. I'm experiencing practically by totally dedicating myself. My wife here is also Vishnupriya Devi Dasi by the door back there. Raise your hand so they see you. Yes. She travels with me. We're a preaching team. We're a pair of spiritual revolutionaries traveling all over the world to tell everyone about Krishna consciousness. And this process is making us, by dedicating ourselves to propagating it, we find that our Krishna consciousness is automatically there. In other words, if you're always thinking how to give Krishna, how to give Krishna, how to give Krishna to everyone, then automatically you have Krishna. Or another way of saying it is, the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So we encourage everyone to be very, very dedicated. If you didn't get a card, just write down the web address, www.backtohome.com. It's like back to home, back to Godhead. B-A-C-K-T-O-H-O-M-E. That'll get you there. www.backtohome.com. So yeah, our experience is by being fully immersed 24 hours a day in giving Krishna to everyone that we possibly can, that it's very easy for us to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that's the another one of those insider secrets, you know, sincerely follow the process and then invite everyone else to do it, and that inviting everyone else will keep you so solidly fixed to just be amazed at how ecstatic Krishna consciousness can be. Any other questions? Everything has made sense. What about in the back there? Any questions? Everyone's entitled asking questions. Yes?
Could you explain a little bit about your e-course?
E-course means, at the end of 2002, I was thinking, this is December of 2002, I was thinking, well, I'd like to try to distribute books on the internet. Let me make a very nice sales pitch about how wonderful the Bhagavad Gita is, and I didn't sell one. But then I thought, why not give them something free so they will take it, especially on the internet, you know. People are not so willing to put money out on the internet and their credit card, you know, it's a little scary. Some they can't even see, they have no idea who's on the other end of the cyberspace there, you know. So let me give them something free. So I did that, I put up this Ultimate Self-Realization course. And then I offered the Bhagavad Gita as a supplementary material, and I've sold so many books just using it as supplementary material instead of the main focus. You give something free, develop a feeling of love and trust between them and you, and then I find that they're willing to purchase. Sometimes even a full set of Bhagavatams we will sell. So, you know, hardbound Bhagavatam, except. So, and it just took off like a rocket. You know, all of a sudden we had people all over the world who wanted to meet me, and so we just started traveling. We were running a preaching center and doing a little business. So basically I gave up the business and just, you know, we still run our preaching center. One of my disciples keeps it going while I'm out of town. And we just travel and preach all over the world. And every day more and more people are signing up from everywhere. Just keeps growing and growing and growing. And we're hoping that, you know, some world leaders eventually will check it out and also sign up. You know, it's something you can do secretly. We hope some powerful leaders someday will come and sign up, and then the results could be phenomenal. You know, if some president or prime minister really gets bewildered and decides to sign up. Yes. Question?
Yes. It's like an ongoing course for beginners, experts?
It's for beginners. But everyone likes it. I mean, I have some of my godbrothers who are very senior preachers. They'd signed up and they enjoy it. Like Vaisheshika Prabhu, the famous book distribution leader in North America. I found out he was enrolled in it the other day. I had no idea. He said, wish me well on my world tours, and I really enjoy your daily emails. Yeah, so it's designed towards It's not about our organized Bhakti Shastri course. It's just it's to encourage people to take up Krishna consciousness, basically is what it is. So every day there's a daily thought, and then there's a some samples from my correspondence every day. Somebody will ask a question, I'll answer it, and you'll see that. That's the most popular thing, is the questions and answers. I get all kinds of questions. So we answer those questions, and people enjoy reading how I answer them. Krishna gives me some good answers sometimes. You know, I think I look for the choicest question. I come up, try to come up with the best possible way to answer it in the most powerful, attractive, and efficient way. And you know, Krishna blesses me with some good answers sometimes, that people really enjoy reading the answers to the questions. Anything else? So, yeah.
Just maybe shortly, how you met Srila Prabhupada.
Yes. Of course, I first met Prabhupada in his Vani form by hearing about him from his wonderful followers, especially His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj. By hearing about Prabhupada from Vishnu Jana Maharaj especially, and the other devotees also, hearing, seeing how much they loved Prabhupada, how much they were dedicated to him, I became convinced to become Prabhupada's disciple even before I met him. But then shortly after that I did meet him. He came to San Francisco. We greeted him at the airport. I had my first darshan in the San Francisco airport. And then he came directly to the Rathayatra site, and that's where I first heard him speak. And that first lecture was very special for me. The very first word that came out of his mouth was Jagannath. He said, Jagannatha Shami, Nayana Patagami, Bhava Tume. This way, with bhakti and sobriety and with great depth he spoke the name of Jagannath. And then he gave a very, very wonderful lecture. Most of the audience were hippies. It was the Rathayatra festival. It was like 90% hippies and 10% devotees. He gave a very amazing lecture. He said that Krishna is the light of the sun and the moon. He said, Krishna is the taste of the water. He said, every one of you are drinking water once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, then immediately you become Krishna conscious. He said, to become Krishna conscious, it is not difficult. It simply requires practice. So Prabhupada made it seem so easy, and he wasn't lying. It actually is easy. That's how easy it is to be Krishna conscious. Whenever you drink water, you simply remember that Krishna is the taste of the water. So that was, of course, as one in the audience. But then I had my own little personal exchange with Prabhupada several days later, which was very special for me. Srila Prabhupada would go on the morning walk. This was after the Rathayatra. Prabhupada went to Los Angeles and he flew to LA and we drove down. I remember one godbrother, Dvija Hari Prabhu, was driving his Land Rover. Usually he's very obedient to the speed limit, but on this drive he was really pushing the, as they say, is it putting the metal to the pedal? Or the pedal to the metal, yeah, that's. We were really cruising to get to LA as fast as we could so we wouldn't miss even 1 minute of Prabhupada's association. Of course, we missed some of it, but we got there as fast as we could. He was flying and we were driving. We had to try to get there as fast as possible and not miss even 1 minute of his nectarian association. But I remember the next morning, Prabhupada came back from his morning walk, and the old system was we would line up along the sidewalk. If you've been to the LA temple, there's there's a temple building there with steps going up, and the sidewalk comes out to the street, and then Prabhupada's quarter entrance is on the side of the building. So Prabhupada would come out, he would go around the steps here, the going up, and he would go and then go back. So anyway, the system was, we would line up, all devotees would line up along the sidewalk. Prabhupada would get out of the car, and he would hand each devotee a flower. Actually, we would hand Prabhupada a flower. That's right. And he was given a basket of flowers. So as he came down the line, I would hand Prabhupada, you know, each devotee would hand Prabhupada a flower, and he would hand one back. So you had to have, you got your own personal interchange with Srila Prabhupada. Every single devotee got their own personal exchange. You know, the loving exchange is giving and receiving. So everybody had an opportunity to engage in a direct, personal, loving exchange with Srila Prabhupada. I mean, that was really special. I was standing right by Vishnu Jan Maharaj. I was, probably speaking, the second person in line, and he was the first. Of course, he got a hug. And I felt I wasn't envious. I just felt grateful to be an associate of Vishnu Jan Maharaj, that he was so special that Prabhupada would hug him. He had such a special relationship. Prabhupada immediately got out of the car and embraced him. Wow. But anyway, I gave Prabhupada my flower. Shishi Garnitai Kijai. I gave Prabhupada my flower. He gave one back. I wondered what to do with this flower. Anyway, I was holding it in my hand. And Prabhupada then kept going down the line. One devotee, another devotee. And I thought, this is really sweet. Just to gaze on Prabhupada's form is like drinking nectar through your eyes, you know. They're like drinking in the sweetest nectar to see the form of Prabhupada right in front of you. I mean, wow, it's incredible. So I just stood on the steps there by the leading into the building, so I could have a nice bird's eye view, you know, looking at Prabhupada. I stood up on the steps there. And Prabhupada came by. He had gone through the whole line of devotees. Now here's another, you know, devotee who's not in the line and standing up on the steps. So Prabhupada looks up at me. He didn't say it verbally, but with body language, you know. He looked up, he held up a flower like this, like, did you get a flower yet? And I didn't say anything, I just nodded, yes. It was just all body language, you know. And so that was my first, I saw how merciful was Prabhupada. I was just some, you know, wild, you know, renegade practically who shaved up and put on a dhoti. I wasn't any leader, any special person, but Prabhupada took all compassion to make sure I had gotten my flower too, that I had been left out of his mercy. And in this way, Prabhupada endeared himself to all of us. He had his ways of actually reaching out and touching every single devotee in the movement. This was his great power as an acharya. He was able to do that with an incredible expertise. Everyone felt that Prabhupada personally loved them and cared them about them. So much so they were willing to do anything and everything to please him. That was the mood when Prabhupada was here. And I have some good news for you all. Prabhupada is here right now. And you can still reciprocate with him by reading his books and dedicating your life to following his instructions. You will feel that same connection. You will drink that same nectar that we felt when we were in Prabhupada's presence. It's just as available now as it was then. Any other questions? Yes.
I'm fairly new to the Krishna consciousness movement, but I wonder, you know, from experienced devotees like you and others here, since Prabhupada has left his body, who is in charge of ISKCON, and how is the structure evolving? You said it's a big family. Okay,
yes. Yes, Srila Prabhupada created in around the year 1970. What was called the Governing Body Commission. The acronym is GBC. He created a system within the movement itself to manage the society. And he instructed us that we should follow the GBC. The GBC is there as the... They meet once a year and they are in charge of the whole movement. That's how we are together as one movement, because we all accept the authority of Prabhupada's GBC. He established the GBC, the Governing Body Commission, as what would be oversee the activities and keep us all on the same track, that we're all working together. So, that was his instruction. Now, he personally ordered me to follow, and then we also, each temple has a leader also, that is called temple president. So, the temple president, he answers the GBC, and the GBC body, each member of the GBC answers to the whole GBC body. So there's no one person who's a dictator. It's all done as a cooperative way. We have a GBC body that makes the decisions of the direction the movement should go in, and each temple president, he's responsible to the local GBC for that area. And then the low devotees in the temple, they work under the authority of the temple president. This is the system that Prabhupada set up. So even when he's not physically here, if we just stay loyal to his system, then we remain together in his, under the shelter of his lotus feet.
And I hear a lot about Gurudev, for example.
Yes, and there's also the... That on the administrative side, you have GBC and temple presidents. On the spiritual side, in terms of inspiration and shelter, that then you have the guru institution. Srila Prabhupada instructed his disciples that you should strictly follow my instructions. In this way, you become guru. And you also, after my departure, you make disciples and increase the branches of the disciplic succession. So in this way, Prabhupada empowered us, his disciples, to become spiritual masters and to initiate disciples into this line of succession coming from him. We initiate the new members as our own disciples. We take personal care, just like a father and the children. But Prabhupada is there as the grandfather, the merciful grandfather, who's seeing everything and blessing. So the new students that we convince to join the movement, when they're ready to seriously take vows of initiation, then myself, there's about maybe another 80 or so of my godbrothers who are initiating around the world. When someone, a serious candidate, comes and wants to take shelter completely of this process, then we take complete charge to help them and guide them as an eternal commitment of relationship, that I will take full responsibility to see that you do not take birth again in this material world. The spiritual master takes all burden of even having to accept the disciple's karma, and he takes full responsibility to help this person go back to home, back to Godhead. And the student feels very grateful. Here's a person who's willing to do anything and everything. He's willing to go to the end of the earth for me. So let me also be, as he is dedicated to helping me, let me be dedicated also to him. The guru-disciple relationship is just like when Prabhupada is here. It was a matter of love. Prabhupada gave himself so much to us that we wanted to reciprocate. We wanted to give ourselves to him. So if you find a devotee of Krishna who's willing to give himself so much to you, that it's just, then you naturally want to give yourself also to him in love, loving relationship. So that is called guru-disciple relationship. So just as Prabhupada, we learned from Prabhupada how to be, he showed us the perfect example of how to be a spiritual master. So now it is our duty and his order that we should do that for our students, to act as guru for our students. Of course, we never feel that we are really spiritual master. We always feel we're just servants of Prabhupada, but yet we have a service to do on his order, to take that position as spiritual master, so that others can have a guru who they can see, they can hear from, they can be instructed by, they can be corrected by, etc. Any other questions? You have very nice questions. This is a nice group here, Antwerp ISKCON. You meet once a week here? Who is the leader here? Tambu? Jai, Hare Krishna. What is your name, Prabhu?
Jagadananda.
Jagadananda. So, everyone should always be bugging Jagadananda to ask what they can do to be of service, to help things go on. He has the duty to coordinate everything here. It's not an easy job. Everybody should help him to make it easier by always volunteering. Can I give you a donation? Can I give you some time? Can I help you in any way? Always be in that mood of assisting him. You see, and that will make things flourish here like anything. So we can stop here. We thank you all very much. Raja Vidra Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.
Vaishnava Sangha Ki Jai.